You are fresh enough to start a new day of fruitful discussions. So this morning we will have the opportunity at last to learn something more about the project that is hosting us. And it is divided in different subsections, which we will see how it goes. Maybe if somebody gets tired, we can have a break somewhere in the middle. And we will start with, we will be treated to a quantitative also part of the project. We will start with this, with a statistical profile of domestic work in Greece.
We're starting with a short introduction.
Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's not on the program.
Okay, good morning. In order to respect this tradition emerging during this workshop, I will have to announce that I have a title for a short introduction which is not included in the program anyway. And in fact, this title seems to be a kind of emerging title of the book or the long document that is emerging out of our research. Probably it may sound a little bit overambitious, but you will tell us in the course of this discussion. The title is "The Worlds of Domestic Labor in Early 21st Century Greece." Okay, I mean that's quite big. Okay. So anyway, we want big ideas to inspire us in the course of completing this this project, which is in the stage of writing up, and therefore, one of the purposes of this exercise is to have your reactions, your responses. Any suggestion, any criticism is extremely welcome in order to develop our argument and make better sense of what we are doing. So, as probably you know, because of we are mentioning that in the position paper, the title of our project is what it says on the board: Gender, Pay, Domestic Work and Ethnic Identity, the Cross-Cultural Construction of Households in Greece. And this project is a comparative study of Filipino, Albanian and Greek women who are employed in the field of paid domestic work in Athens and secondarily in Patras. Patras is the largest city in Peloponnese. In this research we look at the cultural and social conditions that associate these ethnic groups with particular domains of domestic work and analyze the technical division of labor as this is informed by the diverse strategies of both domestic workers and domestic employers. We particularly focus on the ways through which gender and kinship in conjunction with ethnic identity are involved in the formation of perceptions of domestic work. We also consider how the new forms of migrant domestic labor that emerged in Greece in the course of the 1990s contributed to the restructuring of the domestic space of the employers. And I think that there was probably in the draft of the domestic of the position paper that we sent, probably there was a misunderstanding. It wasn't very clear that speaking about domestic space and household, we were inclined to give more emphasis to the household of the employers rather than to the household of the employees. Okay. So the first point that I want to make clear from the beginning is that for us who were involved in this project and who most of us are anthropologists, this project was a challenge to combine quantitative with qualitative methods. In fact, what's going to happen today here, I think for both, Penelope, Angeliki, Katerina, it's the first time in our lives that we are presenting quantitative data. it's in anthropology, perhaps as some of you know, we have a kind of foundational distrust to quantitative research. And we thought that this is an opportunity to go beyond this kind of syndrome and try to do our best in combining these two methodologies. We are going to see what comes out of this today, and anyway, we feel that it was worthwhile doing it. So, in our project, one thing that I have to make very clear from the very beginning is that we were very lucky to have, as a kind of, I call it, super pilot study. I mean, that's an expression which is a bit peculiar, meaning that we did a pilot study, which was, I mean, it was done before we decided to do the project, which also explains the paradoxical situation. And that's the doctoral research of Penelope Topalis sitting on the left of me, which, of course, I am very biased towards the work of Penelope, with whom we have collaborated many years. But anyway, my personal opinion is that it is an excellent piece of ethnographic analysis. I think one of the best pieces of work that we have on migrant women in Greece. So, Penelope's work on Filipino migrant workers in Athens and her research from 1999 to 2001 was extremely helpful and crucial. Helpful in pursuing this research, and even more crucial in the sense that if Penelope's work didn't exist, I don't think that I've ever dare involve myself in this kind of project. So, Penelope's research definitely inspired our project, and it has served as its main engine. So, in the context of this project, Penelope extended her research in two directions. First, she collected further data through participant observation and interviews with 25 Filipina living domestic workers and 20 Greek employers in Athens. She did also research in Filipino schools, in the Kasapi Hellas Workers Association, and in Catholic, Protestant and independent Filipino churches, something which is very, very crucial and in her research is really a very strong component of her analysis. Also, Penelope, in the same period, expanded her study to include Greek domestic workers and their employers. She conducted in-depth interviews with 12 Greek domestic workers and did participant observation in their own as well as in employers' domestic spaces. Also, she collected data through participant observation and interviews with 7 Greek employers during the performance of domestic work by their employees and also irrespective of that. Now, to turn to Angeliki Athanasopoulou, the other main researcher in our group, who is also, I mean, I'm quite biased since with Angeliki we have a long-standing relationship. Angeliki is standing at the moment to be specialized in becoming an expert on Albanian migration, something that we strongly encourage her to do more in the future. She has done extensive research in northern Peloponnese, on the relationship between Albanian-speaking Greeks and Albanian migrants in the rural sector. And now she extended her research to study Albanian domestic workers in Athens between April 2004 and December 2005. Also, she did some research in Albania, where she traveled with one of her key informants. And overall, she did long interviews and had informal discussions with 20 Albanian domestic workers and 25 lower middle class employers. Finally, Vaso Paggiorgiou, who is completing a PhD in our department and is doing research on Albanian immigrants in Patras, did some further study on Albanian domestic workers in Patras, so to give us a sense of what is happening in a town of a smaller size. On the other front of quantitative research, a group of researchers under the responsibility of Takis Kafedzis, who is a colleague, he's one of the specialists we have in Greece on quantitative research and has worked for many years in the National Center of Social Research. So under the direction of Takis Kafedzis and with a very important contribution of Katerina Rozaku, who today will occupy the very important role of handling this machine, but her contribution, I can assure you, is much greater than that in our project, they applied an extensive questionnaire surveying the socioeconomic, demographic and cultural background, as well as the behavioral patterns and attitudes of 453 domestic workers and 200 domestic employers in Athens. And of, our today's presentation will start from giving you this kind of quantitative profile of domestic work in Greece.
How many employers?
200. So, what I want to do here is very quickly two things. Just to give you a sense of where do we place our research in the context of wider discussions and debates, and say very, very few words on our approach, something which perhaps is really, I don't have to go into great detail because this will become manifested in what we are going to say in a while. We situate our research in two contexts. The one is the domestic work literature and the debates around domestic work. Now, the global market and the state are two major points of reference in current discussions about domestic work. Globalization and the erosion of national boundaries have definitely contributed to transmigration and the emergence of transnational networks of migrants. I mean, that's really something accepted by everybody today. And there is no doubt that this is a key factor of the current explosion of domestic work on a world scale. The state, on the other hand, as the principal agent of discursive, legislative, regulatory, disciplinary and coercive, not to say masculinist, and I'm borrowing this term from Anis's an earlier paper of hers, practices, has also been a principal factor in the marginalization of migrant domestic workers. However, I feel that there is an exaggeration in reducing the discussion to these two parameters and to the issue of which has analytical priority. Recent works that focus on the Asian example of really paternalistic states in Taiwan or Malaysia argue for a synthesis of these alternatives, drawing our attention to the issue of mediation. For example, and I'm quoting from Cheng's recent book, which focuses on the Thai example, the intervention of the state and the development of nationhood shaped the localization of domestic service in the age of globalization. And according to Cheng, renationalized servitude is the other face of denationalized service. So I have no major complaint or objection to this statement. However, I think that would be very productive to consider another aspect of mediation, the culturally specific agency of the workers themselves. In what we are doing, we are inspired by the fine-grained analysis of, either ethnographic or not, micro-studies of domestic work, focusing on the relationship between the employer and the employee. For example, Rawlins's work, I think that it's really a very detailed and informative work on the power relationships between employers and employees. Romero's work is also moving in the same direction, and many other scholars. However, we don't take for granted much less than they actually do. We argue that the qualities of the relationship between the employer and the employee emerge in specific contexts of interaction. They are shaped by the culturally specific strategies of both parties, as much as they are subjected to multiple interpretations. And therefore, I mean, this has some implications on the ways in which we are going to deal with the matter of asymmetry and exploitation in this relationship. And also we think that this analytical strategy fits the peculiarity of the Greek case. In other words, weak regulation by the state, of course, what Dimitris said yesterday makes us think a bit more on that. Okay. Not very significant role by recruitment agencies, a huge informal market, and a regime of difference that privileges accommodation via assimilation rather than marginalization of the immigrant workers. So we think that our strategy, which analytically somehow gives more space to workers' agency and the shaping influence that their strategies may have, fits some of the characteristics of the Greek case. Now, the other area in which we want to situate our work is standard Greek ethnography, the ethnography of Greek society, of Greek family, household and kinship. Ethnographers of Greece were among the first to apply the early feminist insights on the mutual construction of gender and kinship to the study of the household. This had a number of productive by-effects. For example, they unraveled the cultural foundations of a hegemonic gender ideology, and they acknowledged the gender and performative character of domestic practices, as well as the symbolic meaning of the gender division of domestic labor. In fact, I think that Greek ethnography, the ethnography of Greece has been one of the first ethnographic areas in which this debate in the late 80s, early 90s on gender and kinship has materialized. Yet, and now I'm coming to some criticism to this literature, and so a kind of self-criticism as well, if I can say so. While we have given enough attention to external, in quotes, challenges to this hegemonic ideology of gender, particularly by focusing in extra domestic spheres of sociality, you know, convents, coffee houses, marketplaces, etc., we failed to consider, in quotes, internal challenges, thus producing a rather static picture of the household. So we feel that it is time to move to a more dynamic view of the household, something that Venetia Kanza, who is also collaborating in this project, strongly encourages us for some time now. So we want to pursue a more dynamic view of the household as, and you allow me this very fashionable expression, as a dialogic space of contestations from within. And we can do that by considering the shaping influence of new types of agents in the household, such as the foreign domestic workers. To what extent do foreign domestic workers contribute to the restructuring of domestic space? And how is cultural difference dealt in the context of the household? So these are really some of the directions in which we want to locate our own research. Now, a few words on the perspective. Our work is, by definition, it's an anthropological work, so it adopts a bottom-up perspective. We try to take as less for granted as possible, which means that categories, for example, on work, we don't take work as having a fixed meaning. We try to see what people say about work, how do they find work. And we try to take rather seriously the differences in the ethnocultural background of the workers. So we are engaged in an intercultural comparison which has as its fixed point of reference the Greek household. I understand that the notion of the Greek household, again, it has a kind of certain reification, but at least in technical terms, we can assume that, and this is something that's been confirmed by our research, that the householders share some fundamental ideas about household and gender identity, and on the context of these shared ideas, we think that we can pursue a comparison between culturally specific strategies of the workers. And also, let us clarify from the very beginning that although we are not arguing for a one-to-one correspondence between ethnic identity and type of employment, we think, and this is going to be discussed immediately after by Penelope, that there is a strong and statistically visible tendency of particular ethnic groups to specialize in particular types of domestic work. In a way, therefore, we have an ethnic division of domestic tasks. In this sense, we can speak about a multiplicity of worlds of domestic labor that then emerge at the intersection of ethno-cultural background and the technical division of domestic labor. So, I think that I have said enough. What we are going to do is two things. First of all, we are going to give this kind of quantitative profile, and then Penelope and Angeliki will discuss the multiple work strategies and and how these are linked with different understandings of work that are being held by the different categories of domestic workers. And in the conclusion, I would say to try to say a few things about the transformation of the household.
Can I have the microphone, please?
Yes. Don't worry, it's... this microphone doesn't... It's not... δεν έχουμε loudspeakers. Γράφει μόνο για το μαγνητόφωνο.
Ναι.
So we should. That's why I was shouting. Can you hear us?
Yes. Yes, thank you.
If you cannot, please tell me. I'll try to.
Ah, Σημείες.
Ναι.
Μας καταγγείλουν.
Κάποιος θα ξανάβει.
So since Akis said a lot of things about the program, I will skip my introduction. I will go on to the findings of the quantitative research on Filipina and Albanian domestic workers. This demonstrates that first, Filipinas live in the domestic spaces of their employers, while a significant proportion of these women work 7 days a week, demonstrating their connection with the living domestic work. They work primarily for one employer, long hours, and they are paid on a monthly basis. In contrast, Albanian domestic workers differentiate themselves from this type of work. They work in many houses for 6 or 7 hours a day and get paid on a month, on a daily basis. Second, before the second, maybe Katerina can show us the some tables from the... Yes, you can explain this.
The first and the second depict exactly the ethnic division, let's say, or the ethnic differences in the type of employment. You can see the numbers. It seems that Filipino work in the same house every day, whereas the Albanian domestic workers work for once or twice a week in a house, in a percentage of 53.1%. So this is the first parameter that shows the difference in the type of employment, whereas the hours per day that they work seem to differ significantly. You see the Albanian workers work in a percentage of 68%, something like 6 or 7 hours, so they're part-time workers, whereas the Filipinos, their percentage seem to vary from 13.8% to 24%. They work either 45, 67, 8, 9, or 10 hours or more, because this is linked probably to their living condition. The fact that they work, they live in the house where they work, so that this is the boundaries between their life and their work are not so clearly defined as it is with the part-time workers.
Okay. Thank you. The second point, Filipina and Albanian women undertake almost the same household duties. Their basic work is cleaning, and domestic work is correspondingly described by the majority of them as house cleaning. Filipino domestic workers, more often than Albanian ones, appear to undertake 4 other kinds of domestic duties, namely cooking, the washing of clothes, childcare, and ironing. The intensity with which these duties are performed is connected with the type of employment and the hours of work it involves, live in, part-time, live out. This also indicates an ethnic hierarchy as soon as one considers the particular symbolic importance of these duties in relation to the construction of women's identity. Finally, Filipinas appear particularly unwilling to undertake the so-called heavy housework, while their Albanian colleagues strongly resist taking on care of the elderly. Third, in case they are asked by their employers to perform undesirable tasks, the two groups differ in their reactions. Although the majority of respondents in both groups consent to demands on part of their employers, Filipinas appear to agree more frequently. In most cases, the Filipinas discuss their disagreement with their employers, while the Albanian domestic workers explicitly refuse to undertake some duties. With regard to the negotiation of economic issues, Albanian women emerge as particularly assertive. However, the negotiation power in the determination of household duties is more limited. Regarding the latter, in the case of the Albanian woman, more than in the case of Filipina woman, it is the employer who makes decisions on the household work and maintains greater control over these duties. The issue of co-decision regarding household duties is indicative. Here are Filipinas who have a slight advantage, while Albanian women appear to be less powerful in the control of the domestic space. Katerina, maybe...
Let's talk about money now. As Penelope said, the ones who determine how much money they receive, for the Albanian, it seems that it's a percentage of 23.7% that they themselves decide on the money they receive. Or both of them together, that is the employer and the worker, for 49%. And it seems that this data speak with the data from the qualitative research, as our researchers probably will tell you later, and the fact that what seems to very interesting is what Athanasopoulou has shown before, that the Albanians seem to have a common, let's say, daily wage or daily payment that is the same in Athens, the money they receive per hour. The money they receive per hour. What is also interesting, in spite of the big numbers, the 44.9% that Filipinos say that the employer decides on the money they take, is the only 2.4% that the agency is the one that decides, determines how much money the worker receives. It may be a really small percentage, but though it's very interesting, it reminds us of the things we talked about yesterday about the employment agencies. And also the determination of the specific domestic tasks that the workers do in the house. As you see, for the Albanian, it's 49.8% that the employer is the one who decides which tasks the worker will do during her work. And the percentage is quite the same for the Filipino. For the Greek, although the number of the people we interviewed was really small, it was only 45 people, it was very difficult to find Greek workers who were willing to talk about their job. The percentages, though, seem to vary in the three answers significantly.
It should be noted at this point that we are in the process of elaborating a typology that draws from this type of data and examines the central hypothesis of qualitative research in relation to the type of paid domestic work performed by different ethnic groups and the types of relationships developed with their employers. Fourth, according to both the Albanian and Filipino domestic workers, employers are present only sometimes or for a few hours during the performance of domestic work. A significant proportion of employers choose to exercise control over domestic work. For instance, they direct and give special advice as to the domestic workers, more to Albanian than to Filipino ones. Despite their common reluctance to perform domestic duties, they differ with regard to the access they allow to the domestic space, for example, through the provision of keys to the domestic workers. Furthermore, here appears a quite intense ethnic differentiation. The percentage of the Albanian women who do not have keys is double compared to the Filipinas, and we can see this table too. Yes.
So it's 28.6. Of Albanian interviewees was that they never have the keys of the house. Whereas the Filipinas, it's just the 13.2%, which is also connected to the living condition and the most paid the work relation we talked about later, earlier.
Okay. Finally, with regard to the ethnic group of the Greek paid domestic workers, remark that they co-decide both economic issues and the undertaking of domestic duties with their employer more often compared to the Filipina and Albanian woman. This may indicate a stronger level of communication and a more equal relation based on ethnic identity and cultural similarity. It is also interesting that in the case of Greek domestic workers, the employers declare a lower level of supervision and control of the domestic space. A high percentage are absent during the undertaking of the domestic work, and when they are present, they rarely give directions and advice to their employers of the same nationality. This sort of equal relation demonstrates itself in the case of a significant number of Greek domestic workers whose employers address them by their first names and the title Mrs. Kyria, while the majority is addressed by their employers only by their first names. Additionally, they say that they feel very close to their Greek employers, much closer than the domestic workers of other nationalities. Furthermore, they think that their employers are very positive towards them, certainly more positive in regard to the Albanian and the Filipino domestic workers. And we can see the last table here.
So these are their feelings in numbers, and the both Albanian and Filipino domestic workers say that they feel close to their employers in percentages of 47.7% and 45.5%, quite big if you consider that they feel very close in really quite a big numbers as well. And the obvious that the Greek employees say they feel very close to their employers in a percentage of 62.2%. But there is a dubious 20% that they feel neither close nor distant, an answer which is not really, it's a dubious answer. Neither close nor distant in a 20% percentage, which is quite big.
Now let's move to the Greek employers. Greek employers are in the majority of cases wage earners, while a small percentage is made up of self-employed or pensioners. Very few employers are full-time housewives. Most of them argue that lack of time is the primary reason for taking on and employing another woman in the household. More specifically, the majority of employers in this research sample have employed domestic workers first from Albania, second from Greece, third from Eastern countries, and fourth from the Philippines. This pattern of employment appears to derive to some degree from the actual number of the above-mentioned immigrant women in Greece. Half of the employers declare that they have no particular preference for one nationality over another. Those of the employers who declare preference put Filipinas in first place as domestic workers, Greeks in second place, and Albanians in third. This hierarchy of diversity is not attributed to particular ethnic characteristics, but is argued to be grounded on the quality of work and the level of communication. More generally, one has to underline the unwillingness on the part of Greek employers to stress ethnic hierarchies and differentiations, a remark which is in contradiction to the data produced by the qualitative research. In the vast majority of cases, the domestic worker is considered a worthy, or axia is the Greek term, a woman. The content of this predominant conceptualization includes integrity and thus trustworthiness, efficiency at work, how orderly and methodical a domestic worker is, her character, and finally, how hardworking she is. The closed and secure nature of the domestic space emerge clearly through these conceptualizations that place greater emphasis on issues of tightness and order rather than the work and of cleanliness itself. A third of the employers state that there are specific duties which they do not want to be undertaken by domestic workers. In other words, they think of housework as strictly and exclusively connected to them. Statements that promote the self and at the same time exclude the other predominate. These are statements that stress the self-evident and natural character of the personal relationship with the domestic sphere, such as, for example, I want to do it myself, I don't want her to be involved, I'm not satisfied with the result, etc. Among the tasks which are considered as personal, the most significant one is cooking. Qualitative research ended up in a similar result, which is further demonstrated by the majority of Greek ethnographers, who consider cooking as the cornerstone of the household. Next in the list comes tidying up, or better, putting into order, which in the qualitative research emerges as significant only for specific ethnic groups, for example Albanians, and in certain work arrangements, for example part-time. Conclusion. First, the position of Filipina and Albanian women in Greek households and their relation to the Greek employers reveals an ethnically defined and culturally differentiated way of being employed and negotiating working relations. Paid domestic work is described as extremely hierarchical, both within the national and, in some cases, nationalistic immigration framework of Greece, as well as internationally, as the bibliography of domestic work shows us. However, in the tough field of domestic work, subordinate groups appear to produce intense differentiations that transform this seemingly unchangeable hierarchical framework. Second, Greek domestic space is revealed as exclusively dominated by the woman housewife, who exerts her control over all domestic duties. This is an element that verifies the ethnographic data of this research, and more broadly, the ethnography of Greece, according to which domestic space and household are formed through the monocracy of the woman of the house. In her encounter with the other, she adopts different practices according to various ethnic groups and types of employment in order to maintain control of the house. The effect is that she reorders segments of her household kingdom, transforming thereby its seemingly unchangeable character. These were some of the quantitative data, and I'll try next, if you don't have any comments to make, to begin with the...
The comment is that we have much, much more... Okay, I mean, we have many... How many questions did we have? I don't remember how many questions did the... How many questions did our questionnaire have?
62 is for domestic workers and an equal number for...
An equal number, okay. So, I mean, we're just giving you a small hint, you know, for...
So, yes, can I go on with the second one? I'll try to present some qualitative data on Greek domestic workers. The title of the presentation, which is... has not changed, but it's not in your schedule, is It Was Like We're Dancing a Ballet, the case of Greek domestic workers in Athens, Greece. During the last two decades, the entrance of immigrants from the Balkans, Eastern Europe, and to a lesser extent from Asia and Africa, resulted to a revival of paid domestic work. After a limited period of crisis, paid domestic work involves nowadays immigrant women of various ethnic groups and not immigrants from rural areas of Greece, as it was in the past. This had a number of consequences. The move to the employment of absolute foreigners contributes to a shift from the construction of hierarchies based on criteria of age, class, and locality, to the construction of otherness defined chiefly by national and ethnic criteria. The comparatively few Greek domestic workers represent a specific case within the contemporary working context of paid domestic work, which is usually shaped in terms of juxtaposition and or assimilation of the nationally, ethnically and culturally other woman. Greek domestic workers do not have to sit exams in the lesson of hospitality, as taught by Greek employers in their own households. They already know the rules of the competitive and relational construction of the Greek self and the inseparable attachment of the housewife to domestic space. Simultaneously, they intensely reproduce the spiti, the house, as a component of themselves as well. Greek domestic workers, when compared to the Filipino, and maybe less so to their Albanian counterparts, occupy very different positions of otherness within the framework of Greek domestic space. While the first are regarded as similar or native, the others are thought of as distant, and Filipinas even more as exotic. And they construct in distinct ways the content both of domestic work and of the working relation. The first question is paid domestic work always the issue? Conceptualization of work by Greek domestic workers and their employers. In describing the experience of paid domestic work, a key concept used by Greek domestic workers is paidema. The English translation could be suffering, but I will use the Greek term because I'm afraid that...
No, it's very difficult to translate.
Yes,
I mean, we
yes.
have a very, very difficult to find the English term to...
Yes.
If there's... I mean, we welcome suggestions. I mean, we'll describe the content and you will tell us in English what it, you know, which word accounts for it.
The concept is used intensely and concerns the untimely and ill-matched coexistence of a woman's employment outside the house with motherhood. Paidema is a woman's state of existence per excellence, whereas both herself and her female relatives are used as an exemplary frame of reference for it. The suffering, or paidemene woman, is a construction of similarity and continuity with the mother. The younger the woman who works outside domestic space and raises her children, the greater the paidema. On the contrary, the older the paidemene woman, the more she distances herself from the situation of paidema, the acquisition of her own domestic spaces, her children who have their own families and have settled their professional lives, pay back a significant proportion of her past efforts and the paidema during her youth, even if she continues to be employed as a paid domestic worker. Overall, paidema is constructed as a constituent element of the present self, but it also refers to the past and to the mother-child relationship. Initially, it is about a past related to the figure of the mother, as paidema is transferred from mother to daughter. However, paidema denotes both a similarity to and a detachment from the mother, since it is the outcome of distance from the mother figure and the absence of support to the daughter in the first steps of having a new family. Furthermore, paidema appears to as an increasing quality of a female self who is oriented to children but does not succeed in maintaining the ideal closeness to them because is forced to work outside the house without being replaced by the appropriate persons, mother, blood relatives, relatives by marriage. Although paidema describes the working experience of the domestic worker in a most comprehensive way, it appears to some degree to be independent of the work itself. More linked to a broader situation of work outside the house, it contradicts motherhood, even though it contributes to the reproduction of its particular form, as this is defined by the prototype of the mother. However, in its mutual interweaving with motherhood and manual labor outside the house, paid domestic work, work in the fields, the paidema reveals at the epicenter the female body in distress, tormented and marked. Motherhood, but primarily work, here with an emphasis on the use of dangerous cleaning substances, but also in the adoption of body positions that endanger health, for example, going up and down the stairs, stretching, kneeling, leave the suffering female body full of traces, swelling, redness, burns, that are gradually transformed into permanent wounds and finally into illnesses, arthritis, rheumatism, lumbago, and so on. From a component element of the narratives of an entire life, paidema is turned into a material, visible, embodied reality. Injured parts are related to specific working conditions, while general diseases come to be related to a broader, undifferentiated condition of paidema. In closing, I would like to stress that paidama is not shared as a concept in like manner by employers and domestic workers, although it does constitute a partial point of convergence of how they give meaning to work. The employers choose to describe the Greek domestic workers as worthy, the same term that we saw in quantitative research, as axia rather than suffering woman, but they underline the employees' devotion to their families and the acquisition of their own houses. This double devotion is demonstrated in practice by the employment of domestic workers in a large number of employers' houses and their quick and hurried work. Within this context, the haste of the workers is transformed from a deficiency in their working behavior to value, while the careless domestic worker is transformed into a worthy axia woman, mother, and housewife of her own house. Overall, the Greek domestic worker is not conceived by the employer as a working unit, a machine, or consumer good. The domestic worker and her work are judged less within a work context and more within her own autonomous field of control, which is her household, domestic space, and her family. Greek female employers not only accept others' women's strong relation to their own domestic spaces, a relation of dominance and reproduction, but furthermore, they use this as an exemplary field in the formation of a woman's self and a criterion to judge work within the tough hierarchical context of paid domestic work. Employers are always the issue. Working relationships between Greek domestic workers and their employers. In Greek domestic workers' descriptions of work and working relationships, the main feature is the possibility of choice they have regarding harmonic or non-harmonic working environments. The domestic worker's possibility of choice, as well as her freedom of movement, is described as the main component of her working experience, which is integrally related to the need, or anagi is the Greek word, of the employer to employ someone to undertake the household duties. Thus, the basis of the working relationship is structured through the possibility of choice for the Greek domestic worker and the non-choice or need of the Greek employer. This asymmetrical situation in terms of need is counterbalanced by feelings of compassion and pity on behalf of the employer. However, these are basically mutual feelings, since they are also expressed by the domestic worker. The relation of the domestic worker with the employer is described in the discourse of domestic workers as a relation of absolute dependence on the part of the employer. The need of the employer not only permits and morally imposes the performance of domestic work by the domestic worker, but also allows or even imposes the transgression of the boundary of the usual content of domestic work and the taking on of extra duties, especially in the case in which this need is defined as a result of the employer's old age. Elsewhere, the inability of the employers to care for the domestic space due to their work outside the home and not their indifference towards household duties, are brought forward as the reason why Greek domestic workers work. Finally, in some cases in which the employers are neither old nor do they work, the reason for the need is not made explicit, but a story is developed around what the employer may or may not be able to do. Through the discourse of need, the all-powerful Greek employer housewife emerges in a somewhat one-dimensional sense as a deficient housewife. Her deficiency is imprinted in the multi-leveled untidiness that characterizes her domestic space. Its subsequent transformation into a place of order, as this is expressed through cleanliness, proclaims the supplementary and finally the surrogate aspect in the relationship between domestic worker and employer. The stable and unalterable structure and tightness of the Greek household require that this gap created by the absence of the housewife be filled. The incomplete space is completed and dealt with totally and almost obsessively by the Greek domestic worker. She, the protagonist now, restores the honor of the house as a part of her higher moral obligation towards the house, and simultaneously conquers it. The conquest of the house by the domestic worker is accomplished through her primordial and primary suffering, the Pedema, and consequently by her close connection to domestic space itself, to her connection to spiti, is the Greek word, to house. Greek domestic workers describe at an initial level relations with spitia, with houses, and not with employers or tasks, dividing this spitia, these houses, into difficult, appearing chiefly in the past, and easy ones that appear mostly today. Difficult houses are the ones that have certain features, for instance, rough floors, and where a specific cleaning of unacceptable surfaces is required. Unacceptable surfaces are the ones that are outside, up, inside. The scenario is finally completed either in difficult or more often in easy houses by showing the housewife as a human being in a situation of need. The Greek employer, for her part, includes the Greek domestic worker in the household, setting terms of absolute harmony. Old and new employers, mothers and daughters, focus intensely on the way in which the household duties are performed, and more specifically on the rhythm and timing. Domestic work, cleaning, arrangement, and generally the order of domestic space seem to be above all a matter of rhythm. Rhythm consists of an amalgam of sensory experiences that include the ways in which the domestic worker makes contact with the objects in domestic space, rough and noisy, the way the domestic worker moves in domestic space, speedy, and above all her good synchronization with the old employer, or the demonstration of a briskness, nevro is the Greek word, during the performance of work in the presence of her employer. Overall, the relationship between employers and employees is described by Greek employers through representations of their sensory embodied experiences concerning the rhythmic integration of domestic workers into their domestic spaces. Old employers and housewives face domestic work as collective and as belonging exclusively to their realm, to which the Greek domestic worker makes a partial contribution. In fact, the domestic work is performed along with the domestic worker either once a week or once every 15 days. The tasks that need to be done are concrete and determined by the employer, despite the fact that a routine is kept to. The knowledge that and the maintenance of this routine, in addition to the division of tasks decided upon between the employer and the worker, which presuppose a synchronized performance, shape and reveal the particular rhythm of the domestic space. And I will mention some words from an informant. We went to the rooms and we did it. We began with the balconies outside, we did the windows from the inside, the shutters, then we came into the house and began moving from room to room, doing the windows and the window frames. She did them, and as soon as she finished, I did the mopping, the vacuuming. She went on, and I went after her. And the house became very, very beautiful. It was like we were dancing a ballet. Through their swiftness, their haste, and their synchronization, the Greek domestic workers appear oriented towards their own domestic spaces, to which they are in a hurry to return, and are well integrated parts of the domestic spaces that belong to the employers. The contemporary undertaking of work transforms the workers into helpers of the employer, literally, completely integrated into the rhythm of work that she and her almost personified domestic space define. Having given ballet lessons to Greek domestic workers, the employers have brought them completely into harmony with their domestic space and have them attuned with the pulse the home's heart beats. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, what's the next point?
Αγγελική.
Albanian.
Speaking about Albanian.
And Filipinos?
Who's next?
Again. Okay. Just to understand how it's going.
And probably after Angelique can do a small break and we continue with.
We are going to run out of time, that is sure.
Yeah, we'll see.
But it means we will have a shorter break for lunch.
Yes.
Okay.
Albanian women migrated in Greece after the collapse of the communist regime with their husbands and children.
Doesn't work.
And the Albanian migration has been characterized as a family one. Their presence has allowed many lower middle class groups, often for their first time, to hire domestic workers. This has happened because Albanians constituted a large workforce which was cheap and without guaranteed working rights. Thus, at the beginning, Albanian women turned into this job because of the demand by the local population. The arrangement of the job was and still is done through the employers or employee social network. During their first years, some of them were looking after elder or disabled persons as live-in or as live-out with a monthly salary. Their duties ranged in a variety of domestic tasks as nursing, shopping, cooking, cleaning, ironing. Especially those who were live-in had to be available every hour of the day, often throughout the whole week. According to them, as time passed, they abandoned work for one employer and they moved to part-time work. They started cleaning houses for a number of different employers for a daily payment. This is the type of domestic work that predominates in the particular migratory group and on which I focus. It has been suggested that the shift towards day work was the major change in domestic work that led to improved working conditions. Albanian women also choose it of its flexible schedules, its independence. They consider that working hours and payment are much better, not only compared to work for an employer, but also compared to any other job they could do in Greece. On the other hand, they say that it's a very tiring and exhausting job, far more tiring than working for an employer. This job is mainly based on their body, their physical effort. In the context of migration, their body is conceived as their only disposable and reliable capital. It is conceived as an endless depository of strength and therefore as a source in their effort to maximize their financial profit. For them, hard manual work is perceived as the fate of all Albanian migrants, the only decent and respectable way to earn their living as well as a better life. By the expression better life, they mean the saving of money in order to obtain real estate in Albania and in Athens, as well as their participation to the Western world, a world that is visualized by them as a world of affluence and consumption. Nevertheless, they say that they are not afraid of this fate, as hard work was not only a common experience, but also an experience highly evaluated in the communist Albania. War, punoi in Albania, was a social and political issue which assured the well-being of the entire population. In the capitalist Greek context, the word punoi became dulia and was transformed into an individual strategy which assures money and the success in the migratory experience. However, this capitalist Greek context is not visualized by them only as a world of opportunities and success. It is also visualized as a dangerous, wild world where workers and especially migrant workers experience exploitation and hierarchical relations. According to them, the danger of losing individual autonomy is even bigger as their work takes place inside the private domestic space of the employer, a space which in the Greek ethnography has been considered immune to elements of the public sphere as economic relations and paid work. The relational aspect of work is recognized by them as a predicament. Thus, they think that they have to try hard and on their own in order to claim their working rights, to control the work process, to escape from hierarchical relations, and to gain their autonomy. The Albanian women's consent to a division of hard work is a working strategy. It enables them to define their duties as clearly as possible, affirming this way the object of their job. The precise determination of their tasks is critical, as they point out two things: that the hard work never ends, and that everyone wants someone else to do the household work instead of themselves. So over time they attempt to transform through this domestic work to a sort of profession. Nevertheless, they say that day work was not always the same for them. They remember that at the beginning they searched for a house to clean. They worked all around Athens. It was the employers who arranged the frequency of work, the tasks, the way that this had to be accomplished, defined the days, the hours of work, the breaks, the payment, the raises. As time passes, Albanian women began to set their own terms. They choose which houses to work in according to a regular or permanent working relation. They usually go a time per week or in 50 days. To the proximity to their own house, they express their disagreement. Moreover, they abandon one house, since it is not their only source of income, and they can find another house in order to replace the one that they left. They point out that nowadays employers are searching for them and not the opposite. With the high quality of their work and their good attitude, they have won employers' trust. So Greek people want them to work in their houses, they try not to lose them, and they recommend them to other employers. They also say that they have a concrete work schedule. The work lasts 6 hours from morning to midday. They arrange what time they begin the work, whether they would have a break, when and how long the break lasts. They also manage to control the payment. First of all, this type of work arrangement allows them to earn more money than the type of work which is based on a monthly salary. The wage increasingly rises, often at the instance, from 20 euros in 2002, now it's 40 euros. Nowadays, the payment is arranged by them, and the payment is related to whether the house cleaning is accomplished. This accomplishment can be less than 6 hours in the houses where work is systematically undertaken. This form of work on and the payment, which does not concern the hours of day of work, but the predetermined payment of the accomplishments of the whole work, in Greece is said apokopi, contract work, and it is usually found in the domain of construction and on self-employment. Back in the domestic world, Romero has argued that the charging by the house rather than by time leads to the creation of a business-like environment, to the professionalization of the job. In our case, this is also a time-saving method which enables them to maximize their physical effort, as it gives them the possibility of combining morning and afternoon work. In the afternoons, most of them clean staircases in block of flats or do the ironing. Other work are jobs that give them the possibility of obtaining social security. Thus, the morning domestic work earns them a living, while the afternoon work provides them with additional income, with social security, and it sometimes offers them the alternative of a future occupation. During the research, it has been noticed that household work does not form a unified whole. There is a division according to which domestic work is differentiated between clumsy or heavy tasks, for dress, barges, bouillets, cleaning and ironing, which are outsourced to employees, and delicate tasks, leptovilles, detail, leptomeria, and daily tasks, touching the employer housewives. The heavy works entail cleaning of shutters and balconies, cleaning of walls, light fixtures, doors and windows, scrubbing of the bathtub and the kitchen. Cleaning includes dusting, vacuuming, mopping the entire house. Delicate tasks involve dealing with objects and spaces such as decorative family hall rooms, bookcases, showcases, computers, CD players, studies. Detail concerns the attention with which the work is performed. It also concerns certain spots that are considered difficult, not visible, and which cannot be easily located and cleaned, behind or under the furniture. Daily tasks include shopping, cooking, washing the dishes, washing the clothes, tidying up, rubbish disposal, a quick vacuuming. This division is adopted from the employers as well as from the employees, but is used and interpreted differently by the two parts of the working relation. Albanian domestic workers believe that the more important work that has to be done in a house lies within their competence, that is, the heavy works and the cleaning. The other domestic tasks follow this. As if the house is not clean, the expensive furniture and decoration lose their value. They are proud when they speak about the houses that they have taken on. They were dirty and after their intervention became clean. This is succeeded often at the expense of their body and health. For example, they say that the use of detergents and water is indispensable in their effort to clean the house properly, to do their work in the best possible way. That's why they insist on using them, even if their use is neither pleasant nor hygienic, especially for them who, after all, come in contact with this on a daily basis and for many hours. At the employer's accusation that they disturb the order of the house, as after the cleaning they do not put the various objects in the previous place, they say, I've cleaned anything. If I change the things, you can put them back in order. You know, it's not difficult. In this way, they underline that cleaning is their own responsibility and the most difficult part of the household work. The objects that have been defined by employers as extremely valuable, financially, aesthetically, sentimentally, are belittled what does she need all these things, are considered as rubbish, savoura, junk, tsoubleka. Albanian employees say that they do not wish to be involved with these delicate tasks, as well as with the details and the depth, because they believe that dealing with these tasks requires a lot of time. They could be done, but at the expense of the cleaning. They also say that they will neither be spared from other tasks, nor could be they asked to work more often. They are supposed to do it all for the same amount of money, with more intensive work and with unpaid overtime. Therefore, they assert that if the employer wants this task to be done, she has specific alternatives. She should call me another day to do this. She can hire a girl to live in. She should contribute too by working with the employee. She must not just sit and watch television, talk on the telephone, go to the gym or shopping. She should maintain her house on a daily basis and she should not leave the daily duties to the employee. Or at least she must not expect everything to be done in one time. Employees also try to organize and perform their works in the way that they consider more efficient. I have my way of doing it. They deny the need of guidance and control. The continuous indication. I know how the works in a house are to be done. What does she want to interfere? That's why they prefer to work in houses where employers are absent, where employees are young, because they are considered less demanding and interventionist. Through the division of domestic work, among other, Albanian employers try to differentiate themselves from the housewife, from the domestic helper who is connected, according to them, daily and exclusively with only one house, and for this reason they believe that she has different and many more duties to accomplish. That's why they do not accept, they do not adopt the definition domestic helper, and they define their work in a roundabout way. I clean houses, I work in houses, I go to houses, I have women, I go to women. They also try to differentiate themselves from the employee who is called the afternoons to iron the clothes. In the morning work, their responsibility is to iron one or two laundries, not more, that's what they say. From the employee who is called occasionally in order to do general cleaning. In both cases, it can be the same employee, but another day or time, and will be paid extra, this time according to the hours of work. Thus, Albanian employees do not only try to affirm the object of their jobs, attempting simply to reduce their physical effort. They rather attempt to have themselves the control of their physical effort, and in the context of paid domestic work, to maximize it after their decision or and when they are paid for this. Conclusion. In Greece, more like charwomen of the past and cleaners of nowadays, Albanian employees work for different people, often to a weekly schedule. They are perceived as self-employed workers by both themselves, the employers, and lately by the state. They can have aftasfalisi, self-insurance, and a receipt book from the Social Security Institution. Changes in domestic work are seen by them as enhancement to their working position. They relate them to the years of their installation to Greece, to the legal status which they have attained. But above all, they relate the enhancement of the working position to the high quality of their work and the good attitude, and to the claiming of the rights. These factors have led them to the liberation from the situation of need, anagi, and to what they see as an improvement in the social and economic status and success of the migratory experience. On the other hand, they say that they could not work like this forever. The maximization of their physical effort has time limits, as it destroys, as they say, day after day, their body and health. older women try to save as much money as possible to obtain real estate and finally to return to Albania. Younger women who intend to stay in Greece try to get another job in the afternoon as a hairdresser, a manicurist, an esthetician, and without leaving domestic work right away. They express the hope that in the future they'll manage to leave domestic work behind, start their own business, or get a white-collar job. We could say that if in the past domestic service was a life-cycle occupation, for Albanian female migrants seems to be a migration cycle one.
Thank you very much. That was very useful. So
should we do a 5 minutes break? 5 minutes
break.
5 minutes break.
Huh? To go to the toilet if somebody wants to just to the,
and the coffee, yes. 10 minutes, maybe.
Ten.
Yes. But you have already consumed the time for your workshop.
There is no 5 minutes break. If you take a break, it's a 15 or 20 minutes break. So.
Continue. Should we continue? Okay. Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
It's me again. Going with the data on Filipino domestic workers, the title of the presentation is "Silent Workers, Vague Work." The case of Filipino domestic workers in Greek domestic spaces. Filipinas first appear in Greece during the late 70s and are a very distinctive group of immigrants. The 40,000 to 50,000 Filipinas who live in Greece are predominantly female household workers and live-ins in the households of the upper middle class. In the dominant discourse of politicians, journalists and laymen, these women have become a status symbol for the households that employ them. The same we can find in Nicole Constable's work on Filipinas in Hong Kong. But the main difference is that in Hong Kong, Filipinas are the majority of domestic workers, where in Greece they are only a small minority. During the 1990s, the term Filipina in Greece became a strong metaphor for domestic work, the nouveau riche, inferiority and passive behavior. On the other hand, the Filipinas distance themselves from the Greek environment. Coming to a country that promotes the nationalist scenario of the heroic immigrant woman, even if a domestic or sex worker, and constructs women as the symbolic bearers of the nation, Filipinas defy attempts to be transformed into non-citizens and non-women. They avoid speaking Greek, address the employers as madams or sir in the surname, deny invitations to eat with their employers, and avoid employers' participation in their personal lives. I will begin with the same question that I put in the case of Greek domestic workers. Is paid domestic work always the issue? As in the case of Greek women who work part-time, Filipina living domestic workers tend to avoid any direct or immediate references to domestic work, while on the contrary, they prefer to focus upon the employer and the relation to her. Within this context, living domestic work is assumed as a condition of existence, not intrinsically connected to dependence, as much of the bibliography on paid domestic work assumes, for example, the works of Colin Romero, Constable, and many others, and not important as such. While the working environment appears to be structured in terms of relations and not in terms of working duties. Despite this, in my persistent efforts to extract the content of domestic work and its meanings, a slippery framework of duties that contains everything, as they say, finally emerges, perhaps a little abruptly. The framework outlined above appears also in the accounts of the employers who highlight the fluid and unspecified content of paid domestic work through statements such as she does everything, she does the housework, and so on. The reluctant translation or the further analysis of these expressions by the Greek informants reveals different levels of household duties. Some belong exclusively to the domain of the employer, while others are conceived as joint tasks. Both the cleaning and the tidying up which in other forms of domestic work become the main differentiating factors between the Greek housewife and the domestic worker, for example, as in Albania, as Agiliki shown, constitute facets of the household duties that, within the context of the living situation, remain largely undifferentiated internally, precisely because of their being entrusted fully to the hands of another woman. The two categories that seem to stand out immediately within the domestic field are cooking and the tasks connected to domestic space, but performed outside its boundaries. The main focus for Greek women with regard to the work of the domestic worker and of the house was and still is cooking. The question is not about something the domestic worker is or is not obliged to do, such as, for instance, sweeping or taking the dog for a walk. Cooking is either done or not done. The domestic worker either knows how to cook or she does not. If most of household activities are tasks or duties, then cooking constitutes an existential condition within the household, shaping and at the same time reflecting a concrete relationship between its members. Almost an intrinsic quality of the domestic worker, or formally an inherent weakness on her part, in some cases it constitutes a lesson of the housewife to the Filipina, who as an humble student surprises even her teacher. For the Filipina woman, cooking is a basic demonstration of her care for employers through the choice of a selection of special, usually Chinese meals, or cookery that gives pleasure and often generates enthusiasm as sweets. The duties related to the outdoor domain, shopping, picking up the dry cleaning, going to the shoemaker, washing the car, cleaning the pool, the garden, the employer's shop, the employer's relatives' houses, taking the dog for a walk, and so on, are described by employers as well as by domestic workers as marginal situations of domestic work, or as exceeding its content mostly in middle-class households, where this area of duties is clearly limited. We do not have pool cleaning or taking the dog for a walk or shopping at boutiques, etc. In these areas, the person who is thought of to be in charge of these duties is the employer husband, who at his own initiative shifts his duties to the living domestic worker. Faced with this constant shifting of duties by the employer wife takes a critical stand. The manners and the pace or rhythm of these shifts of duty from the side of the employer husband appear to violate the order of domestic space and the working relationship. While the employer wife sees her continual entrusting of duties toward the domestic worker as harmonic, gradual, mild, almost natural, on the contrary, she interprets similar gestures on the part of the husband as breaches, insults, and exploitation. The employer husband is always a step beyond the limit of domestic space in the management of and the relationship to the domestic worker. Within this spectrum of inappropriate consignments, the housewife intervenes constantly, restoring the balance and defining the proper rhythm of domestic space. Employers here are always the issue, here too. Filipinas orient themselves toward the employer as a person and the relationship with her, rather than with the work, the working experience, and the working space. Essentially placing on the margin issues concerning the duties, working hours, salaries, and in a sense what makes up the main content of the work, they appear to negate the concept of work itself. Meanwhile, along with Greek and Albanian domestic workers, they form a three-tiered grading of identity constructed by different relations to work. The top position is held by Albanian women, who focus explicitly on work, the second by Greek women, who balance work and kinship, and the bottom level is occupied by Filipinas, oriented towards the domestic relationship. The main priority of Filipinas is the employer, the relationship between them, through continuous efforts at adaptation within the world of the employer and the satisfaction of her needs. Verbally, this relationship oriented towards another is constructed through the concept of care. Used in the often suffocating working context of the Greek domestic space, care concerns the imagined or less often lived relationship with the employer, or else it is about the ideal forms of relating to another woman. The content of care involves around two basic characteristics. First, reciprocity, and second, silent and non-discursive means of communication and expression. This silent and noiseless performance and communication can be detected intensely at the level of the body. However, it does not appear in the conceptualizations of Filipinas, neither within the framework of the workplace, nor of the churches, where, especially the independent churches where I did my fieldwork, where silence constitutes a part of the embodiment of religious ethic, which indicates a disregard of the body, or at least of these parts that signify the intercultural relationship. Filipinas strongly resist the use of employers' metaphors that directly place them in the position of a daughter. In the beginning, Greek employers prefer to describe the caring behavior of their domestic workers as professionalism and politeness. As time passes, the attitudes of Filipino women are interpreted as signs of love that place them in the position of a daughter. Although the majority of employers favor this pattern of female relationships, Filipinas oppose its use, preferring the alternative rhetoric of care, and choose nonverbal communication that constitutes the essence of care. This refusal challenges the unidirectional flow of obligation and sentiment that characterizes both the mother-daughter relationship in the Filipino context, concerning mainly adult daughters, and in the Greek context, as constructed by the employers. Care, on the other hand, is totally reciprocal, a continuous exchange of understanding, respect, money, and work. Filipinas focus on their employers' bodies and observe closely and silently in order to determine their needs, their moods, and how they can fit into their employer's world with a minimum disturbance and change. In return, they expect a similar opening of the Greek self to the Filipino other, focused on face and body language, on everyday habits and needs. Unfortunately, this opening up and adjustment to the other is at odds with the Greek female self, who in her spatial extension, the house, and often outside of it, demands a complete adjustment of the other, especially of the female other. Filipino domestic workers depart suddenly and without notice from Greek domestic spaces after 10 or 15 years of employment. The silent departure without warning is considered by many employers, to be an ethnic or racial characteristic of the group. In this way, and since they are aware that conflict for Greeks expressed verbally and in high tones constitutes a predominant way of relating to others, Filipinas adopt a form of reaction very common within the Filipino context, as we can see from the Greek for the Philippine ethnography. Greek expressiveness is characterized by an aesthetic of loudness and a form of relating to each other, structured around shouting, direct and often insulting forms of address, forms of knowing the other and feeling which focus on verbal rather than observed qualities, and non-reciprocal forms of relating. In response, Filipinas raise a huge wall of silence, which is perceived by employers either as discretion or love, or as a total and absolute rupture when they leave the house without a warning. Unfortunately, this practice is never perceived by Greek employers as a suitable way of expression, communication, negotiation, a way of building a relationship between women. Through this mode of reaction, however, Filipino women defy the hierarchical terms set by employers. Moreover, they destroy the domestic space as it was almost unwillingly co-constructed with their employers, as a space where the shadow domestic worker, all giving and totally observed, follows mildly and silently in the holy steps of her madam. While domestic sounds and textures, olfactory conventions and visual displays of domestic space seem constantly maintained through the presence of Filipino domestic workers and the performance of care, Their sudden departure opens up domestic space into something strange, sets it into a nervous state, and shakes our previous beliefs as well as its precious immobility.
Okay. Thank you very much. Shall we have a break now?
Let's be okay. Okay, I will make a very short conclusion. I think that really the floor belongs to the main researchers. I will just give you 10 minutes, very briefly say two things. I mean, I'm a little bit excited because I had you know, a conclusion with a title, and I have a totally new title now, so I wanted to tell you. Really, I'm excited. My new title is on cultural, what is it? Let me see. Yes, on functionally productive misunderstandings. Okay, so I think that we heard. Sorry? On functionally productive misunderstandings. Now, the term misunderstanding, of course, it has an ironic element. In Greek, we say parexigisi, and parexigisi is a very loaded term in Greek context. I'm afraid I don't have time now to analyze it. However, I will try to say a few things on how what we heard is really a commentary on the idea of parexigisi. So, but before I go to that, my first point is that our work has, we are interested in putting our basic findings in a historical context. The phenomenon about which we are speaking is a phenomenon that belongs to the short term, it lasts 10, 15 years. Okay. It is a process, it's a transformation. I mean, things change all the time, but also it occurs in a wider context, which has two aspects. The one aspect is internal migration and domestic service in Greece throughout the 20th, from 19th century and the 20th century, and Pothiti will comment on that in her contribution. Okay, so we are not ignorant of that. We take it very seriously into consideration. And the second is that in relation with recent transformations, what we find out is that on the one hand, Greek women who were historically involved in living arrangements as internal migrants have gradually turned into part-time workers. However, they retain a number of the characteristics of the ancien regime of living domestic work, and they come near to what Sotelo defines as live-out housekeepers. Okay, so it's an in-between category, the proper living domestic workers and the kind of part-time workers that have been described in Angeliki's paper. On the other hand, living domestic work has assumed a new content as it is now performed primarily by Filipino migrant workers. And also, and I think that's perhaps the most important point in terms of transformations, in the course of the 1990s, we have a new form of domestic work, which is part-time, strictly limited to cleaning. And this clearly emerges in the context of the work strategies of migrants from Albania, who pursue the transformation of domestic work into a kind of standardized profession. In that sense, our work belongs to a wider discussion about the professionalization of domestic work. Lutz's work on Germany and other cases are contributing to our understanding of what's happening at the moment. Let me turn quickly to this functional misunderstandings. So, Greek employers and Greek employees, definitely a misunderstanding, but a very functional one. Okay, each party belongs that she is really in control of the household. Okay, the domestic worker appears as a kind of superwoman who does not only control her own household, but also she has the responsibility of other households as well, which are being regarded as an extension of her own household. Okay. On the other hand, the housewife, the employer, somehow lives with the deep belief that she's the instructor of household duties to the domestic helper. She is the teacher, the other is the student, and through a kind of performative dancing together in the house, which has it's a kind of bodily rhetoric that she is there and somehow she is in control of the situation, she comes out as the person who, although she has another Greek woman sharing her kitchen in the last analysis, which is really one of the most contradictory situations in the Greek culture. Okay, and René Hirschman has written a book which demonstrates very nicely the impossibility of sharing, of two women sharing a kitchen. Okay, so she even shares a kitchen, and however, not feeling that she has really totally exploded, you know, distracted the dominant gender ideology, which informs her position and her self-perception as a housewife. That's functional misunderstanding number one. Functional misunderstanding number two has to do with Greek women and Filipino domestic workers. And I think Pinelopsi's work, both what she said today and her larger project, illustrates that very nicely. In the short term, under this idea of kinship love, of care, of extending yourself to the other, somehow relating the performance of the household duties with the making of kinship ties, both parties appear to somehow achieve, in a miraculous way, a state of absolute identity. Okay, they meet together under a shared rhetoric of kinship, which is very strong in both contexts, in the Filipino context and in the Greek context. But, there is a big but here, the content of this rhetoric is very different. The difference in the content of this rhetoric is being somehow managed through the fact that the Filipinos assume this kind of silent approach to the performance of their domestic duties, which matches very nicely with a very loud approach to the same issue from the point of view of the Greek housewives and employers. So in the short term, this works nicely, but apparently in the middle term, sometimes, not always, and that's something perhaps that we'll have to look more carefully, the relationship reaches a point of crisis, a crisis which is not manageable, but because there is no place there for bringing into the surface this misunderstanding. Okay. And what appears to be on the surface cultural identity appears in the middle term to be a kind of non-negotiable cultural difference. And the relationship just breaks down. And as Pinelopi has said very nicely in another contribution of her, the employer probably will end up into the psychoanalyst, because that's really a big cultural shock, and a shock, I would say, full of promises in terms of cultural change. Okay. So, I'm coming now, and I'm finishing. I have another 3 minutes.
10 minutes.
I have another 3 minutes. I'm watching the clock.
Okay.
So, the Albanian strategies of professionalization. As far as I'm concerned, I regard these strategies as, at the moment, the major vehicle of transformations in the household. This distinction between delicate tasks and heavy tasks somehow works on the basis of classificatory divides within the household, which have been mentioned extensively by ethnographers of Greece who studied the household, you know, in the post-war and in the earlier period. I don't have the time to go into detail. Perhaps if you want, we can discuss it more in the discussion. However, the point is that these Albanian strategies somehow produce a kind of dual household. I mean, they produce a kind of fixed division of labor within the household between the kind of part-time employer, householder, and the part-time domestic worker. And this kind of division of labor reproduces within the household a kind of of divisions in space, in objects, which can be analytically conceived through this juxtaposition between cleaning and putting into order. The housekeeper keeps under control all aspects and objects within the household, which are the depositories of local knowledge, okay, and which have great economic and symbolic value. And she just gives full control to the domestic worker, aspects of household activity and maintenance, which are being described as cleaning, and which are symbolically classified in a lower order. So I think this is a transformation that is currently taking place in quotes, the Greek household. It is an intensification of forms of differentiation that have been historically marked by ethnographers. So I can stop here, and we can have a discussion.
Yes, but the question is if we don't need a break now, because it's 12:30, and I would suggest this, but I want to listen to you.
A short discussion and then a break, maybe.
Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, well, please.
Just it's a clarification. Aren't the Filipinos actually rejecting the kinship model? Aren't they rejecting the engagement in terms of love, sentiment, mother-daughter, and saying, or not saying it, but actually through their practices and silence, is saying,
yes, that's what I understood.
No, this is care, and I do it with, you know, carefully, but that's not this relationship is not about kinship. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's why they can leave, because it's not about kinship, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
it is work. Mm-hmm. They're doing their work, and their job is caring job, but it's not kinship. And the confusion is coming from the other side.
Mm.
So it's not to share. It's two different practices and orientations, and they are able to coexist because in the actual embodied practices there is a coincidence, and because of the silent strategies, which, if you think of the Carol's volume of Marriage and the Market. The ideas, for example, concerning Southeast Asian workers and their passivity, etc., which, you know, as they argued, were actually, again, ways of doing the work, because those were the systems within which these women were working. The sort of hierarchies that within which they were working.
But and also ways of avoiding heavy work, very often.
Yeah, so making your life
particular
kinds
of work.
Yes, yes.
I understood that the misunderstanding is rather in the fact that the Greek employer interprets this caring attitude, which is their way of working, as love.
Yes.
But it's not a misunderstanding from the other part. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yes.
The Filipinos didn't want to be treated as part of the family. You know, they'd say it in that way. The employers would say they are part of the family, but that wasn't they were actually quite professional in their attitude to their work. And I wonder, did you match the employers and the employees?
Not always. Because it's very difficult.
Yes.
Very.
Well, I think it's much better not to match them, in fact.
Sometimes you can see some things more clearly if you match them, but it is very, very difficult because they never accept it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Because they are guarded if you match them. Mm-hmm. The employees are guarded. And they have to watch what they say.
Yeah.
Sophie?
Thank you. It's slightly different point if you're on the same point. It's an ethnographic one. I was surprised in the discussion of none of these three that there was any talk about substances that were brought into or taken out of the house, and in particular fights over what kinds of things count as cleaning agents that one of you referred to just in passing, and whether these clean the house or just destroy it. Mm. Not just the woman's body health, but the inside of it. And it's related to another question about Pedema. Because I was confused, I'm not the clarification. I understood that you were saying that pedema was carried in the employee because of this impossible segregation between being inside the household and outside, epitomized by the kinship bond. But I didn't understand why or whether or how far this was a generalized women's condition that also applied to the employer, who is only employing a worker because she also has this pedema of being split between the inside and outside and goes to work and suffers different, perhaps, bodily damage. So, was it related to another point of clarification, is this a kind of women's solidarity strategy or being a domestic, a certain kind of class of worker strategy?
Can I answer now? I think it's the second one. They never apply to employers and employers never apply to themselves.
Why not?
I don't know.
Analytically speaking, why not? Because they're in exactly the same structural position as their employees.
I think it has to do mostly with manual labor. And I'm trying to say, right, but in very few words, employers very rarely are employed in
manual labor. I imagine.
So it has to do with the body and it has to do with...
But so childbirth and mothering is not manual labour.
No.
There's no way that you slip the kinship into being manual labour. Because it sounded almost as if you did.
Okay.
Which would be very interesting.
Yeah. Okay.
I'd like to say that...
Not everybody together. I thought you also raised your
hand. I wanted to say something that Miss Day said.
Okay.
About the detergents and the destroyer of the body. I didn't have the point of view of employers. From their point of view, they don't want the use of detergents and all of this because financially it's not good to, because they think that the employees use a lot of water and detergents. They destroy the objects, all these things, and they destroy the health of the family, it's polluting the environment, and that the employees cannot understand this, and it's a very
big fight
between them.
And also it does go back into kinship, because it's the children who get, bodies that get to be damaged, which is the most inside.
And they say that they do not know that... they have from pharmacies some like this, but they're not the detergents. They are very specific, and you can use it if you have children and all this. But that the Albanian employees do not know all these things.
I just wondered, was there not a is Eleni here? Yeah. But you know, she was talking about the tracers. The Albanian women were moving the Turkish rugs around. You know, so that it wasn't just the cleaning; it was also, here's my trace that I've done it.
I
just wanted to. I was wondering, pedema and pedi, what the relation between the two, because I think there is etymologically, and pedi is child, so.
From pedia, is it not pedema?
So pedema is putting on trial, so. I think it's etymologically related to pedia and, of course, pedia, so probably there is more to it than...
Yeah. I see two hands. First, Eleni.
Something about pedema. I think in terms of the Greek... how can I say that? Greeks use pedema sometimes in a strategic way. Greek mothers use pedema in a strategic way, which is, look how much I've got the burden of the whole family, and look what I do for you, and you have to be grateful. Especially grandmothers do that. And sometimes you get like the grandmother with the house, with the nanny, who is foreign, and they both sort of, not both, but the grand said, look how we and they look after the children, and they say, look how we are getting all the burden for the children, how we are getting tired, you have to be grateful for what we do for you. This is very common in Greek culture, that the grandmother, you know, does a lot, and we have to be grateful to her, because she does a lot, and she, and it's sort of, sometimes, I'm not saying that they are not being burdened, but sometimes it's an exaggeration, and it's a call for recognition, let's say. It's as if, you know, this what I do is it doesn't get any payment, so I need your recognition, I need you to...
But with the grandmother, is that because, unlike the mother, they're not obliged to, they're doing it for love, or do they carry a particular obligation to do this?
Well, they do carry an obligation, I think, in Greek society.
If I'm allowed to intervene here, I mean, there is lots of ethnographic work on the rhetoric of pain, not just grandmothers, particularly by mothers. I mean, Jim Dubis has written a whole book about it. So, and we should take more seriously into consideration this work on pain. Now, the fact that they use the word ponos instead of pedama should not really disorient us. Okay, I mean, I think that more or less they are pointing to the same direction, and thank you very much for your remark. But I think it's a much more extended phenomenon. It's very central in the poetics of womanhood, to use Hirschfeld's term. Okay.
First, Sarah.
I think you hit on the word that I think comes closest to bedama, even though it's more of a noun in English, which is burden. And this idea of burden or burdensomeness, I think, somehow comes
light. I think it's lighter.
I think it's lighter. So that's one thing. But the other was about the fascinating differences that you drew between the different types of worker in there. And at some point, particularly when you were speaking about Filipina women, that, you know, classical, both irritating but very unavoidable book, Weapons of the Week, Scott, sort of floated through my mind, especially in the kind of talk about the embodiment of it. Mm. But what I found very interesting was the way you compared the three different kinds of workers, and what seemed to distinguish them, in addition to what you said, seemed to be a tendency to disagree with the employer, a tendency to actually explicitly rather than implicitly disagree, and that seemed to have some kind of effect. And I was thinking back to very early on, we were talking about this issue of communication and quality, and you mentioned both of them, that people, that employers often judged workers according to their ideas of the quality of work, but also the levels of communication that it was possible to have. And I was wondering whether those two actually weren't quite often actually the same thing in certain respects, that perceptions of quality were quite often a result of better or worse communication. Mm. I think certainly in terms of one of the biggest difficult relationships in domestic work in the UK is with builders, the more masculine version of the domestic work, and the communication thing seems to be huge. So I was wondering whether those things are related, in that if there's some level at which the Albanian workers, for example, are saying, no, I won't do this, or no, I will not come at 9 o'clock in the morning, I'll come at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, or no, I will not do heavy work, or yes, I will. And the Filipino woman might actually, in effect, do the same things, but without explicitly confronting. That might have a quite important element in how it works, in addition to this the embodied element of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The huge constraint
of
living and living. I have a question to Penelope about the concept of family and the kinship relationships, and especially about this relationship, the metaphoric relationship of mother and daughter. What about the age differentiations of these, of the employees and the employers? If, for example, we have a very young, a very old Filipina worker and very young employee. So, what about this kind of relationship? Is it possible to put this kind of to think with metaphor of kinship and metaphor of daughter and mother, if we have this kind of age gap between them? This is my question, because I also have confronted this kind of problem in my own research, that the terms there are a little bit confused.
Do you want to answer?
Yes, mm-hmm. But there are two, so I'll start from Sarah.
I think that what you mentioned, Scott and Filipinas, Angeliki can tell you about Albanians, but I can answer for Filipinas. Filipinas are exactly the opposite of the hidden transcript that he describes, because this is not a strategy to confront the employers. This is a way of dealing with others. You can see it very clearly in the churches, in Filipino churches, where silence and these non-verbal forms of communication and relation are very, very dominant, and they are not parts of a hidden transcript against ministers or something. They can be sometimes, but they're the main way of dealing with things. So I will never use Scott here as a theoretical background. Concerning age differences, there are, you're quite right, there are many, and not so much on concerning the age of the domestic workers. Yeah. Even if a Filipino domestic worker is very old, yeah, it doesn't make so much difference. She's still a copela, as they call them. I cannot find that.
And the daughter the same time?
Maid.
Symbolic daughter,
not so easily, maybe. Not so easily, maybe. And maybe she will not do so many things if she is very old. But mostly they are not old. At least the time that I did my fieldwork research, they are in their 30s and 35 and mostly 40. So Greek domestic workers are much older, 60, 55, 60, 65. But there are very many differences in at the age of employers, and these differences show different directions in forms of relationships. For example, older housewives and employers reject the silence of Filipino domestic workers from the beginning. It is never transformed into love or politeness or something, because they seek for an employee who discusses with them all the time. Uh-huh. The sample that I had in my fieldwork was composed mainly by women in their 30s and 40s, mm-hmm, employers. So these women were the ones that... Yes.
Annie wanted to say something.
Positive first. Yes, and positive. First, and Annie, and then we can finish, I think. Yes?
I would like to make a point about this rapture in domestic work that I think I just described that happened in the 80s. I think that the rapture comes from migration only, but there is continuity in domestic work since the 19th century to the present. And there is a shift from leaving domestic work in the 60s, from leaving domestic work to live out, day work it means, which happened in the 30s already, or the 20s, because living work became undesirable for domestic workers. But I mean, according to the statistics in the 60s and 70s and 80s, still there is a big proportion of women doing day work. There is, of course, an increase, but not a rupture in this term. There is continuity and things. And the second thing that is related to this is that we didn't hear anything about race.
Race.
In both cases, this is a question for both. And because from what I've seen from interviews of Albanian domestic workers, I think that the race played a very big role in the way servants, I mean, domestic workers were treated in Greece nowadays, which makes a difference with the way the Greek domestic workers were treated. So,
I would say two things.
No, race.
Distinction. Racial distinctions.
I'd like to say two things. The first that you said, I think that sometimes we forget that, and historically, when in a house there was a servant, sometimes there was a child woman too, who came some days to wash the clothes or do the heavy work. I think at
Paradulestra,
yes, child woman. And I think from this child woman has a lot of elements we can find in Albanian domestic work workers. As for the other, I think that when an employer decides to open its house to an Albanian, it's not easy to be a racist. There is a problem, but they think that they know this woman, they know from the neighborhood, from the school of their children, and they think that she's something else. She's a good woman, she has her family, I know her husband, I know her children, and all these things. There is, I think that this division of labor that I talk about has an ethnic point. They say that, the employers say that an Albanian employee can handle the delicate task. They do all these tasks like the heavy work and they destroy them. They cannot do all these things. And this is they relate this to the backwardness of Albania. They said that Albania had nothing. They had not houses like ours. They had not windows like ours. They had not beds like ours. So they can they have to tell them how to do the tasks, and that's why they do not give them some tasks.
So there is a cultural hierarchy, I mean,
yes, in this division of,
latent in,
yes.
Does this fit with your observations?
Maybe I'll add something about Filipinas, because you asked. I don't understand if you mean race as an analytical category or native category.
Yeah.
I think that analytical.
So you propose to use it as an analytic category?
Yes, in order to analyze discrimination in the field in ethnic terms, if it exists. I mean, we don't have to find it as a, you know, race in the way the employers talk. I mean, to use the word.
Okay,
but
I'm telling this only because there is a, I think. There is a big discussion on using this term these days,
yes.
And I would prefer to use the ethnic or something other.
A broader rules.
Yes, a broad, something broader, which not involves so much biological issues. But
discrimination,
it
doesn't mean that it has a biological.
Okay, I'm
from your biological point. I think in English you might mean racism, but you might mean the racist stereotypes that perhaps Filipinos hold, as well as the act of politics of exploitation. Yeah. I think we would talk of racism.
Yes. Racialized, maybe.
If I may add something on this point, too, I think from our research it appears that there is an interweaving between ethnicity and class, both in probably in the attitude of employers, which means that they are doing this low-skilled job, so they are lower class and they belong to one ethnicity, but also in the discourse of the employees, both Albanian and Bulgarian men and women. But there is also a counter discourse on this by the employees, and I mentioned the example of the Albanian man who say that the Greeks are lazy. Mm-hmm. So they this is a clear response on the attitude they receive. And on the part from Albanian women, we have also this kind of reaction against the Balkanist attitudes their employers often have. I think that would be a more apt to describe the attitude. For example, by coming to work very well dressed, and then the employer is surprised that she is an Albanian. Because Albanians are not supposed to dress like this. And then finally, what we also found in our research is this, that this interweaving of class and ethnicity is on the same time fluid. Because when the migrant workers go back to their home country, it is reversed. So they become the upper class and they are symbolized as being euros or something associated with money and richness, etc.
And sometimes I want to say something. They said that the education was very higher than their employees' education.
Yes. More educated than their employers often, yes.
It was just along those lines, and I think it's really, really clear from a lot of the different ethnographies, not just about the Balkans, that it's certainly about what you might want to call ethnicity or some sense of that, and class, and it's particularly the way that those things cluster around women's work and women's sort of intimate things as well. But there's also, I think it's something that's much more than ideas about backwardness attached to the Balkans. I think that there's a really strong historical dimension of saying this is associated with the backwardness of communism and the heavy-handed Stalinist labor, and the labor that makes people and makes work, but also the labor that isn't capable of dealing with the sophistication of high culture and I don't know whether it's the high culture of capitalism or democracy or Western consumerism, but there's an aesthetic judgment and a class judgment and a political sort of historicity of it all tangled up, I think, that's really, really difficult to untangle.
But when I said backwardness of Albania, I meant this tour that they with Hoxha and the community, nothing.
Yes.
What they say.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Anne and
Effie
and Dimitris. And Dimitris. And then we have a break. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to make this point again, I think, about the living constraint, which is, I think, so much can be interpreted in terms of the silences, etc., amongst the Filipinos, because they are so constrained. It's a real stranglehold living in. And I think that's why we have such a high proportion of the women Filipinas that we interviewed were actual runaways, that they felt the same way they could escape that relationship. And once they've gone in to live out work, they're just as assertive about the hours that they work. You know, it wasn't like a sort of a cultural thing that they were always going to work in that manner, that once they were out of the living context, they were much more like the Albanian women in the way they regarded.
In England, you mean? Yes. Because they're like this in Hong Kong, for example, but they're not like this here.
Yes. And then I think that's the constraint of the living relationship.
It could be if we didn't have these differences. I mean, in different receiving countries, I think that we see different reactions from Filipino domestic workers in the living situation.
But you compare it with living out or not?
No,
well, then you can't attribute it to culture rather than structure. Yeah.
But we don't have it in the among the Bulgarian livings, as the paper I will talk about will show.
We are struggling with this issue, which is absolutely central to what we are trying to do on a comparative level. I mean, what is analytically, I mean, what is the relative significance of the ethnocultural specificity of the workers' identity and the type of arrangement?
Yeah. Okay. But in the quantitative data, did you not have without Filipinos?
So far I mean, the line that was being defended by all speakers somehow is supported by the evidence, although, as I'm saying, we are very aware of the problem that you are raising. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I just wondered one other point of information from the quantitative data. What percentage of the employers were dual career? What's the quantitative, the Greek employers? How many were dual career? So I wondered how much was this, you know, almost like necessity, how much was status and lifestyle?
Okay. 41 were wage workers.
Percent. Percent.
41%. Yeah. 18.5% were self-employed. 16% were pensioners. 9% were employers of somebody else, and only unemployed. There were only 3%. And housewives were 6.5%.
So it's very low, isn't it?
Okay, Dimitri, who is working?
I was covered
first?
By the... I was covered by what Annie exactly asked, in fact. If there is, in fact, internal differentiation among ethnicities, according to the... If there are changes in the relations with the employers after a change in the type of work.
Within the same another,
May I put my question after, before you answer?
I want to last, because otherwise maybe it is dangerous to slip to a sort of ethnic essentialism. I mean, by explaining social practices or by a sort of phenomenology of communication. I mean, for example, about Filipinos, what strikes me is the contradiction between this silence, the practice of silence, and when we see the social space, the collective real Kasapi, for example, is the most active, and the association which puts the things, I mean, they fight for labor rights also, not only. So it is a little bit contradictory. I mean,
no, it is not contradictory.
Let's have the other questions, and you can answer at the end, because.
Okay, just one very brief question first. You mentioned that different ethnic house workers define considerable domestic tasks differently. I mean, they don't. I'm not sure if I understood well. Is there any cultural significance of that? I mean, do Albanians and Filipinos define different tasks as considerable domestic tasks? Are the same tasks defined as difficult, heavy, considerable, or whatever? Or do they differ? That's one question. And the other, I could continue at the line of Dimitri's intervention. I mean, all good work gives us incentives to go beyond that work. Isn't it, I'm asking the anthropologist here, isn't it time to look more, in a more differentiated way to the Greek household, if we are to talk about reconstructing the Greek household? Because I have the feeling that whereas, I mean, there is a care to be very precise and point out the differences between house workers and all these criteria and parameters that you developed, Greek housewives or Greek households remain essentially this more or less the same as defined several decades ago. I'm provocative on that, and exactly. So I think it's time to move on, isn't it?
That's what we what we said.
So I suggest
you are saying that we are not moving on.
Yeah.
Okay, last answers, and then we really have to stop because otherwise we won't have time for the second part of this morning session.
There is, I think there is a great importance of the context where agents are situated. And here we have many different contexts. Kasapi Hellas is one, living domestic work is another, part-time domestic work is another, and the independent Iglesia Ni Cristo church is another, Catholic church is another, and so on. So in this context, I saw very different behaviors. This means, it can mean two things. First, that anthropological research should be considered unimportant because it we focus on a very small number of people, and so we cannot see the whole picture. For example, living domestic workers. But it can mean that the context itself has a very special role to play here. So in Kasapi Hellas, there are people who may, and I've seen this, in their living positions, be very, very silent, while when they are outside, behave totally different. The same holds true to the churches. Okay, they can belong to evangelical churches, which is very festive and very lively and so on, and in the living domestic work, context can be this way, okay, and maybe the opposite sometimes. So I don't think that we should seek for homogenized behaviors in of people in terms of culture or ethnicity or something. Okay. You asked about differentiations in conceptualizations of tasks. Filipinos do not deny to talk about tasks in detail, as Albanians do. Albanians discern between delicate tasks and housework. Filipinos talk about everything, so there is a big difference here. But domestic space, I don't know.
Can I say that? Yeah, I mean, I have to say that we are struggling with this problem. There is an inertia in these studies of the household. And I have to say that this work is a work that started by focusing, first of all, on domestic workers. I mean, the employers are being introduced into the picture exactly, first of all, in order to make a more proper sense of what's happening in the world situation, but also because that's a way through which we can involve in this discussion the household as well. And even the very topic of this conference, I mean, this workshop is really part of our attempt to approach the household as a problem. Now, I think that we don't have time to go into greater detail, but probably will come out in the coming sessions. What I suggested that there are transformations coming out from particular kind of strategies adopted by particular kinds of workers in the household. Okay, this can be come out more in the discussions, but I admit that if we have managed to make a more systematic connection between different types of domestic work and categories of domestic workers in terms of identity, etc., and different types of employers, definitely that would have improved the picture and helped to materialize our agenda. Having said that, again, I should say that, for example, what we said that we should find, whether we have discussed, we have analyzed pairs of, try to match domestic workers with employers in our quantitative research, that was extremely difficult.
No, I think it's not a good thing.
You say it's a good thing. I think it would be a good thing as well to have achieved this matching. Because if we have achieved this matching, then we could, through the quantitative research, manage to, because in the quantitative research we can differentiate employers with various criteria. And therefore, if we could match this differentiated category of employers with the domestic workers, probably that would help to answer questions of the kind that Effie raised. Anyway, we are very slow. You will excuse us in that, but I think that anyway, we are having a little progress in this direction. We hope that the work of other colleagues will help us as well, because the wider literature moves slowly in this direction as well, which is again very important.
Okay, well, thank you everybody for a very fascinating workshop, and we will meet again in 50 minutes, 1:30.